Nice.
Yes.
What should we do with one of the approximation, with one of the approximate shows up on midterm or a quiz, and we have to compute a whole bunch of values, trigonometric functions that not very nice multiples of pi?
You mean for something like where you use Simpson's rule or the trapezoid rule?
Yeah. Pass slide rule.
Don't worry about it. Okay. You will not have to worry about it. I mean, there could very well be problems on the exam that involve these various approximations, but they're not going to be problems that require great mental acuity, you don't have to be extremely good at arithmetic to solve them. Well, you'll have to know what the various rules are, and be able to demonstrate that. We don't have to be amazingly good at arithmetic, to put it mildly. Yes?
Well, then the practice is the term, do we have to solve it out? Have you looked at it?
I haven't looked at it.
The problems will be of the nature, do something that clearly illustrates you really know what is going on, but don't require using a calculator.
Could we just set
it up with numbers? Yeah. Show them that. Yeah, basically. Just solve it out. Add up all the numbers. No.
Okay.
You have to know what numbers to use. You don't have to use it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's quite easy to do.
Okay. That is, if there is something like that. I'm not saying there is or isn't. Okay, so welcome back to 20B. The announcements are that first there's a midterm next Wednesday. Unfortunately, if you're going to remind me about this, I have a bigger problem, which is that I left my notes in the copy room. So I have my laptop with the notes on it, fortunately. But if you point out a mistake, you don't get my laptop. So what we're doing today is sections 11.1 and 11.2, and this will be about sequences and series. How many people in here have seen sequences and series in even the barest form before somewhere? So most of you have in a previous class. Okay, that's good. So the third question that we're going to address today is the following. So here's a sequence. A sequence is literally just a list of numbers. Often you're asked to maybe find the next term in some sequence, but that's not at all what we're going to do here. I'm telling you the sequence is 1 over 2 to the n, inverses of powers of 2. And the sort of question that you might be asked about the sequence is, what happens as n goes to infinity? What does the sequence go to? 0 converges to 0. So I'll say a little more about what that means and why. And then we'll talk about series. This is an example of a sequence that converges to 0. Here's some examples of series. 1 half plus 4 plus 8 plus 16 plus the 32nd, and so on. You can sum up these powers of two, or these inverses of powers of two, and you can ask, is there any rigorous meaning to this infinite sum? And if so, what does it mean? And this is the sort of thing that comes up in paradox we've heard about, which is the following. Let's suppose that I'm right here and I try to walk halfway to the desk, and I walk to here. That's like the first half right there. And then I walk half the additional distance, which is a quarter of the way to the desk. And then I walk half of the additional distance. Will I ever get to the desk if I keep walking halfway each time? If I only walk finitely many times, I won't get to the desk. But if I somehow were to repeat this indefinitely, well, I mean, the fact is I do get to the desk. I'm always walking halfway. It's kind of weird. But in any case, I'll tell you exactly what this means rigorously in the context of this course and how to evaluate this sum. We'll see what it's equal to. Then there are other similar sums, like a third plus a ninth plus a 27th plus 1 over 81, and so on, where here these are powers of 3 in the denominator. There's another sum that has fascinated people for a long time. The inverses of the squares, 1 plus a 4th plus a 9th plus a 16th plus a 25th, and so on. What is that sum equal to? So there are all kinds of different sums, and I'll give you today a rigorous sense of what these things mean, and in some cases, how to compute them. Okay? By the way, there's a nice notation for these sums. The first one is very nicely written as the sum as n goes from 1 to infinity of 1 over 2 to the n. It's a nice compact way of writing exactly the same thing. Likewise, this one could be written as, or we will write it as sum n equals 1 to infinity 1 over 3 to the n. Somehow much clearer what sum I'm talking about when I write it like this. And the final one is sum n equals 1 to infinity of 1 over n squared. So these are all infinite sums, and I'll give you a sense of what they mean today. Okay, let's start with sequences, though. So first, the definition. A sequence is just a list of numbers. There's the first element of the sequence, the second element of the sequence. And in this class, the numbers will always be real numbers. So here's the definition. A sequence is a list, a sub 1, a sub 2, a sub 3, a sub 4, and so on, of real numbers. You can even think of a sequence as being just like a function, except instead of the domain being the real numbers, the domain is the integers. So, well, actually, the positive integers. So alternatively, think of a sequence as a function, let's call it A, from the positive integers. They're denoted n for natural number. This is just the numbers 1, 2, 3, and so on, to the real numbers. So that's another way of thinking about a sequence. It's just a way of associating, well, it's just a choice of a real number, a choice of another real number, and so on. No big deal. And many of you have seen it already. And here's an example of a sequence, 1 over 2 to the n. Another example of a sequence is, so this is the notation used in the book, 1 over n, as n goes from 1 to infinity. This means the sequence of numbers 1, 1 half, 1 third, 1 fourth, and so on. That's what this is. So this is the sequence of 1, 1 half, 1 third, and so on. Here's another example of the sequence n over n plus 1. And this has terms 1 half, and then the next term is 2 thirds, and then the next term is 3 fourths, and so on. And the typical sort of questions that you ask about a sequence are, does it converge or not? And if it does converge, what does it converge to? Those are really the two questions you have to be able to answer about a sequence. And it turns out that
Since you already know how to sort of understand what happens with functions, that for the most part works exactly the same for sequences. So everything you know already just carries over. So here's a theorem. First, let me define convergence before stating the theorem. So what does it mean for a sequence to converge to some limit? All it means is that the terms of the sequence get closer and closer to that limit. More precisely, the sequence A sub n, as n goes from 1 to infinity, converges to a limit L if, well, the informal intuition is that as n gets larger and larger, A sub n gets closer and closer to L. And I'll write that in words, and then I'm going to replace it by a precise mathematical statement, which actually means something, and which is what you'll see in the book. So if as n gets larger, A sub n gets closer and closer to L. Quick, what does this sequence converge to?
Zero.
Excellent. This converges to zero. What about this one?
One.
Excellent. What about this sequence? Square root of n. Does it converge to a specific real number?
No.
This does not. This diverges. How about this sequence? Sine of n. Does this converge to anything?
No.
No, because it bounces all over the place like crazy between minus 1 and 1. So this also diverges. Certain terms of the sequence get closer and closer to various numbers, but you don't have it. It isn't the case that every single term of the sequence is close to a specific number for all large n. Okay, so this is what convergence means. And just so you know what the secret precise definition of convergence is, it's the following. I'm just going to rewrite this part in a more precise way. So rewriting those in quotes. Put it this way. What's in quotes really means so here's a precise meaning of the following. I mean, that just isn't really very mathematically precise. So a precise statement is, for all numbers epsilon greater than zero, there's a B such that the absolute value of A sub n minus L is less than epsilon whenever n is greater than or equal to B. So that's a precise, carefully stated with quantifiers way of saying what's in quotes. You won't need to know that on an exam or in this course, but I thought I'd just tell you. It's in the book also. So you don't need to know this. Okay, so now in order to be confident that you're correctly telling me what various sequences converge to, here's a nice fact. Suppose A sub n is a sequence and f of x is a function with f of n equal to A sub n. Okay, so that's the hypothesis. I haven't stated what you get out of this, but it's a hypothesis. And a good example of that sort of thing is here. Here's a sequence. A function that looks very much like this sequence is f of x equals x divided by x plus 1. Notice that if you consider this function f of x, then f of n is equal to n over n plus 1 for any n. Okay? So that's just the input to the theorem. If you have that, and I'll erase this disclaimer. And limit as n goes to infinity, or actually, sorry, limit as x goes to infinity of f of x exists and equals a specific real number L, then the same is true for your sequence. Then the limit as n goes to infinity a sub n is also equal to L. Okay, so this is really nice. It says that if you have a sequence, then you can just replace the n by an x, consider the corresponding function. If you can figure out what the limit of that function is as x goes to infinity, then you get the limit of the sequence. So let's just test this out again. There's a subtle catch, though, which I'll explain for you in a moment. Okay, here's a sequence. What does it converge to as n goes to infinity?
One.
Someone said one, which I don't agree with. Two sevenths, very good. If you just replace n by x, you get a function, f of x, and f of n is equal to the nth term of the sequence. And you know how to compute the limit as x goes to infinity of a function like this. You, for example, divide top and bottom by x squared, and you end up with 2 plus 3 over x minus 5 over x squared divided by 7 minus 1503 over x minus 2 over x squared. And as x goes to infinity, these other terms, 3 over x and minus 5 over x squared, they both go to 0. And likewise, in the bottom, these other terms go to 0, so you end up with 2 over 7. So very good, that's correct. And we know this is right because you know how to find a limit for a function, and that's what you're using. Okay, here's another one. What about sine of n pi? What does that converge to as n goes to infinity?
Zero.
Why do you say that?
Because every term is zero.
Good point. Does anybody agree? Wait, say that again?
How does he know that, like, draw is zero?
Well, what's the what's the term when n equals zero? Or actually say, what's the term when n equals one? What is sine of pi? That's sine of pi is zero. What about sine of 2 pi?
Zero.
That's zero. What about sine of 3 pi? That's zero. Sine of 4 pi, that's zero. If you have, there's a formula here, but every single time when you plug in an integer, you get zero. Yes, in the back, please.
What if you don't have an integer, though? Like,
well, so if you consider the function sine of nx, what's the limit? Does this exist? The limit as x goes to infinity of sine of nx. Does that exist? No, because, you know, x can be anything, so you end up with all, oops, actually, sorry, this is wrong. I meant x pi, sorry about that. As x varies, this is going to vary all over the place, and this limit simply won't exist. But here, when you consider a sequence, you're meant to only plug in integer values for the n. You give a formula in terms of n, and then you just get one term, the next term, and so on from that formula. And the only things you can plug in are integers. A sequence is it's just a list of numbers that you where you have one for each positive integer. So
In this example, this does not converge. The function, the sort of natural function you might think of that agrees with this sequence does not converge. But the sequence itself does converge to zero because every single term in the sequence is zero. So you have to watch out. If you could write down a function that agrees with your sequence at integer values, but doesn't converge. That doesn't tell you anything. It just could happen. All this theorem says is that if you have a function that does converge and agrees with your sequence at integer values, then your sequence also converges. Okay? Does it make sense? Can anybody think of a function that agrees with sine of n pi at integer values and converges?
Sine of 2n pi?
That should be a function of x.
Oh.
What's the simplest function you know of?
1, 0, x.
Excellent, 0, x, very good. 0, x, that's a function, f of x equals 0. That's a function that does agree with this at every integer value, and this converges. So you could use this f equals 0, in this theorem if you wanted. Okay, so you don't have to use the first guess that you come up with. Okay, so a lot of sequences that we've seen converge. Let me throw another one on the board. What about n to the fifth over square root of n plus sine of n? Does that converge?
No.
No, that doesn't converge, because it goes off to infinity. Okay, so that's sequences. There's a couple of various statements about sequences, like the limit of the sum is the sum of the limit. In some cases, the limit of a quotient is a quotient of the limits, et cetera, et cetera. All these things look very similar to what you've seen for functions, and I'm not going to talk about them at all. And you won't really need to know, very much for this class. So we're going to go on to series now. Any questions about sequences? Okay, on to series. Again, any questions? Anything confusing that I've said so far? Okay, good. All right, so we're done with sequences. Now series. So the big question is, what does this mean? By the way, the whole point of doing sequences and series right now in this class is because there are a lot of functions, such as e to the minus x squared, that are of crucial importance in actual, in biology, physics, etc. And these functions are kind of hard to deal with, given what you've seen so far. So in practice, what you often do is approximate them by polynomials. What's the best way of approximating this function by a polynomial on some little interval? Well, there's a there's something called Taylor series that very nicely it's a general theory for how to approximate functions on intervals in the best possible way by polynomials. So, I mean, there are various ways in which to think about it, but that's what you get out of Taylor series or Maclaurin series. And that's where we're going with what we're doing. Also, there are a lot of differential equations that you can solve much more easily from the point of view of infinite series. So, basically, when you actually do real-life things, series are crucial because they allow you to take complicated functions and intelligently approximate them by very easy functions, namely polynomials. Okay? So that's the driving, that's where we're trying to go with all this. That's why it's important for this class. Okay, so now I'll tell you what a series is. Or at least what a series of real numbers is like this. So a series is an infinite sum n equals 1 to infinity h sub n. So it's kind of like a sequence, but it's not. It's an infinite sum. Okay? Now, associated to any series, there's a sequence. Okay? So I've given you the definition. But now you need to know what you can do with these things. So given a series, look what you can do. Let S of n equal, actually I'll write S of capital N. Let S of capital N equal the sum as little n goes from 1 to capital N of a sub little n. So for each positive integer capital N, you have a specific real number. This is a real number. For example, let's take the series 1 over 2 to the n, and I will use my notes or my computer to tell you what some of the terms are. So if you sum up just the first term of the series, you get, big drum roll, 1/2. Okay. If you sum up the first two terms, S sub 2, it's 1/2 plus 1/4, which is 3/4. If you sum up the first 10 terms of the series, you get 1023 divided by 1024. And so on and so on. In general, if you sum up the first capital N terms of the series, you'll end up getting a number that looks like a power of 2 minus 1 divided by a power of 2. Okay? You shouldn't see that. It's not clear. I'm just telling you that's what numerically you observe. So the important thing now, this is the most important thing, the definition of the value of the series, if the series converges, is it's just equal to the limit of these partial sums.
Switch erasers. I should wear a yellow t-shirt. Okay, so the series sum a sub n as n goes from 1 to infinity converges. Waiting for me to turn around to see how bad the damage is. So it converges if the limit as capital N goes to infinity of S sub capital N converges. And then you write sum N equals 1 to infinity, A sub N equals this limit. So it's very natural that this would be the definition of an infinite sum. So just in a quick one-sentence summary, the definition of an infinite sum is you take the finite sums, you just truncate the sum, you take that sequence of finite sums. If that sequence of finite sums converges, then you say that the series converges, and it converges to the limit of that sequence of finite sums. Pretty natural, right? So in this case, assuming this pattern holds, that S sub n is always this power of 2 minus 1 over that corresponding power of 2, what is this sum right here? What's the limit of a sequence with terms that look like this as n goes to infinity?
1.
You're right. And indeed, if you start here and you keep halving the distance and then adding the additional half, you eventually go a total distance of 1. But what about this one? Is there an easy way to see quickly what's going on for all the other ones like this, for the powers of 3 or the powers of anything? And I'll show you. The answer is yes. Okay, any questions? Now, again, it seems sort of like, you know, why am I just throwing some random series at you that just involves some, you know, fractions? It seems kind of weird. It turns out that many, many functions that you're familiar with, this is just a little commercial aside, such as e to the x, very familiar function. There's a series representation of this function. So that's plus dot, dot, dot. If you have any specific choice of x, then e to that number is equal to the sum of the series, which is that number to the n over n factorial. Okay? So it's, and that's just e to the x, but actually, every function that you've encountered in this class has a nice series representation like this. And if you take the series and truncate it somewhere, then you get a polynomial approximation. All right, so back to the story. So now I'm going to tell you how to quickly find what goes in this blank, or indeed in any similar blank, when you're summing inverses of powers of some fixed number. Okay? So let's consider general case. So I'll tell you how to find the sum of the geometric series. I'm going to get the indexing the same as in my notes and in the book. So for any A and any R, I'm going to tell you what the sum of this series is. Though, of course, there are lots of choices for R for which this series doesn't converge, so you have to watch out for that. But I'll give you a formula right here that will tell you what happens. So first, if R is equal to 1, what happens with this series? Okay, it's the sum of A. And let's assume that A is not 0. A is not equal to 0. What happens if you set R equal to 1? Here. So what's the situation when R is equal to 1? Does that series converge, diverge? What happens? I'll give you a second to think about it. True. That is a true statement. If R equals 1, then your sum is it's like the infinite series. It's the infinite sum. It looks like this. Sums of A. And certainly if A is greater than 1, that diverges. What if A is equal to 1 or less than 1? What happens? If you keep computing this sum for bigger and bigger numbers of copies of A, what happens? Does it converge to something or does it diverge? So, just to give you a little help, what is S sub n? So S sub n, that's the sum as little n goes from 1 to capital N of the nth term here, which is just A, and we assume that R is equal to 1. And then what is that equal to? So it's just n copies of A. So that's equal to capital N times A. Okay, so now tell me about the sequence limit as capital N goes to infinity, capital N times A. Does that converge or diverge? It diverges. Excellent. It diverges no matter what A is, assuming A is not 0. So we're always assuming A is not 0. So in this case, this infinite sum diverges. Because you're just adding the same number to itself infinitely many times, that doesn't converge. Okay? What if, even worse, R were greater than 1? What would happen here when you consider this sum? Let's say R is something like 2 or something. Does it have any hope of converging? No. So here it's also going to diverge. However, if R is small, say R is less than 1, let's assume that R is greater than, or say greater than 0 also.
By the way, the R over here is 1/2 from the first example, and the R right here is 1/3 in the second example. If R is less than 1, then there's some hope, because these powers of R are going to get really, really small. Just like over here, the terms, the new things that you're adding on, get much, much smaller each time you add on another one. Okay, now to end the suspense, let's write down something that will verify. So, S of n, this is actually true in all cases, which is by definition the sum as n equals 1 to capital N of a r to the n minus 1. This is equal to a times r to the capital N 1 minus r to the n over 1 minus r. Okay. And if, so in order to evaluate this infinite sum, all you have to do, now that we have this formula, is compute the limit as capital N goes to infinity here. And when R is less than 1, the only thing that's changing when you go from one term to the next is that in the top, your R, you're taking this number that's less than 1 and greater than 0 to larger and larger powers. So that's just going to go to 0. Okay? So the limit as capital N goes to infinity of A times 1 minus r to the n over 1 minus r, this is, again, assuming that r is less than 1, this is equal to a times 1 over 1 minus r. And that's what I put here. And here, what's the, there's an a here also. So I think the a here is also 1/2. Or maybe 2. Let's see. No, it's 1/2. So here, if you use that formula, it's 1/2 times 1 over 1/2. There we are. So this is a formula for the sum of an infinite geometric series. Now, I skipped a huge step, and you should be puzzled at this point. So what did I just completely blow by you without telling you at all? Right. I didn't tell you at all why these two are equal. So let me tell you. So first, the a doesn't matter, because you can put the a on the other side of the sum. So I'll just erase this part right here and write what I wrote over there, but without the a. And then I'll explain that it's very simple to see that the two are equal. So on the one hand, on the left-hand side, ignoring the a, you have the sum as n goes from 1 to capital N of r to the n minus 1. And on the right-hand side, I claim that that's the same as 1 minus r to the capital N over 1 minus r. These are a little too close. Comfort. Okay, now here's why this is true. All you have to do, so just write out the left-hand side. It's 1 plus r squared plus dot 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 plus r to the power of capital N minus 1. And the right-hand side, I'll just leave it like it is. Now, why are these two sides equal? Well, one way you could say this would be to say, you know, use the division algorithm and divide this by that, but that's kind of bad. Another very easy way to say that these are equal is to simply multiply. Multiply both sides by 1 minus r. And on the right-hand side, you have 1 minus r to the n, and on the left-hand side,
you have this thing minus r times this thing. And all the intermediate terms cancel out. You end up with 1 minus r to the n. So let me show you the details of that.
Why A is not
important? Because, so I'm using the distributive law for addition, and this sum is equal to the same sum but with the A on the outside. So N equals 1 to capital N, R to the N minus 1. And see, there's an A right here on the outside completely. So if I can show you that this sum, which I'll rewrite, looks a little bit messy, r to the little n minus 1. If I can show you that this sum is equal to what's in parentheses here, then you just multiply both sides by a, and you get the you get this. OK, does that answer your question?
Yes.
OK, good. All right, so the only thing left to explain is why these two are equal. And all you do is just take both sides and multiply by 1 minus r. You get 1 minus r times 1 plus r squared plus then that plus r to the capital N minus 1 equals 1 minus r to the capital N. Question, is that true or not? And it is true, because look, if you just use the distributive law, this is first you multiply 1 by the whole thing, and you get 1 plus r squared plus da 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 plus r to the n minus 1. And then you subtract off r times the whole thing. So that's r times this whole sum. And then if you distribute that r through, it's 1 plus r squared plus da 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 plus r to the n minus 1. Minus r squared, minus r cubed, minus dot dot dot, minus r to the n. And do you see anything canceling in this sum? Well, yeah, see the r here cancels with the r there. And the r squared here cancels with the r squared there, and so on. And you end up being left with just 1 minus r to the n. So indeed, these two have to be equal, because when you multiply both sides by 1 minus r, you get something that works out. So if you're not convinced, you can try a special case, like n equals, say, 3 or something. And I'm just saying that 1 minus r times 1 plus r squared is equal to 1 minus r cubed. Okay, and you see if you just multiply this out, everything, all these cross terms cancel, and you end up with 1 minus r cubed. Okay? Is that okay? So this is how to find the sum of a geometric series. It's just one particular instance of a series. So let's use it right here. Let's figure out what the sum of 1 over 3 to the n is. I have no idea what it is. What is it? Well, you just have to get it to fit into the shape over there. It starts out with a third. Notice that there's an n minus 1, which makes it a little tricky here. So first, what is the r that we're going to use here? 1/3, excellent. It's the ratio of one term to the next. Okay? And then what's the a? You can figure out the a pretty easily, because the first term in this infinite sum is r to the power of 0. So a is just the first term in the infinite sum. So a is 1/3 as well. So what do you put in that circle? I think I heard somebody say it's 6, but that can't be right, because already the first term of the sum is bigger than that, and it's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger.
A half.
Why do you say that?
because 1 minus 1 third is 2 thirds, and we can cancel a third from the numerator to the denominator, we get 1 over 2.
Excellent. So a is a third times, divided by, just using the formula over there, divided by 1 minus r, which is a third. So it's a third divided by 2 thirds, which is a third times 3 halves, which is 1. Okay, so any infinite sum where the terms are got by taking a previous term and dividing by a fixed, multiplying by a fixed number, you know how to find the infinite sum. You know how to evaluate the sum. It's given over there. So you can just do that. Yes?
For the problem, we would be given A
and R, right? No, you have to figure that out. You have to notice it. But that's okay, because you can find A, it's just the first term. And you can find R just by figuring out what you're multiplying by each term. Or the quotient. It's the quotient. Notice that if you take a third, if you take a ninth and divide it by a third, right? Then you get a third. So. Yes.
What's the biggest?
Here. It's just the upper limit of the sum. So I'm considering the finite sums as you sum from 1 to capital N. You could have called this any letter you wanted. Okay? So you could have called this J or something. It's just some extra letter I put in there, which I regret greatly because I have to say capital N in front of you, which you know, you just distinguish it from the letter. Okay, what about this last one? Sum 1 over N squared. Do you have any idea what that sum is equal to? Can you find this sum using what I've showed you so far?
No.
He can't. Anyone else? So this one is different, and it's actually harder to evaluate this infinite sum. The first person who did it was Euler, and it turns out this one is equal to pi squared divided by 6. It's really a lot different. So the sum of the inverses of the perfect squares is equal to pi squared divided by 6. There are probably 100 different proofs of this. I won't show you any of them right now. But this is one of the most famous sums you'll ever hear of. Okay, so I'll stop 4 minutes early. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you on Monday.
Don't worry about that. Relax.
Don't worry about that.
If you give me almost any sequence, 20 terms, I can probably give you 100 sequences that continue it and are all in text. It's awesome. You have a question, so don't worry about that sort of question. Yes?
Okay, how do you
Okay. Yes. I'm not using that equation. I'm using this one right here.
Well, I've got a procedure for Bogot, procedure for generating subsequences, polynomial interpretation for arbitrary values, a sub n plus 1.
Yeah, that will do it. Use this. It's just right here. So this has an infinity.
Right?
Uh-huh. All right. You have an equality.
So you just go 1/3 times.
Yeah. So R's. You get the r, that's the number you keep multiplying by there, which is 1/3.
Okay.
Then you get the a from the very first term of the series.
Okay, got it.
Yes?
I want to know the homework that's due on Tuesday. Is that going to be on the midterm?
The midterm will be up through and including today from the last midterm. That's what we'll choose the problems from.
Okay.
So I don't know how that relates to what homework's due on Tuesday.
Okay.
But I'm telling you now that the problems are up through and including today, but not beyond.
Okay.
Okay?
Alright. Did you say you'd be able to give us our
Yeah, I can get your midterm or your quiz score, certainly.
Okay.
Hold on a second, I have to find it. Dang it. That doesn't look hopeful. I have them. The TA probably just emailed them to me. I mean, not the TA, the grader. So I have to remember which folder I put them in. Having trouble finding the grade because I guess her email doesn't have her name in the sender thing. Sorry. But I do have them. It's just a matter of time. Here we are. Okay. What's your name?
My last name is Pino. You need my first as well?
No, Pino should do, but I want to know what your first name is.
Yeah, Guillermo.
Guillermo, okay. Wait, how do you spell Pino? Okay,
Pino.
So you got 6.5 on the last quiz, and then 7.5, and then 10. Those are your three quiz grades.
What was the last one?
6.5? Yeah, 6.5.
How much was it out of?
10. 3 each out of 10.
Oh, okay. Do you know what the average was? Or?
I'll be able to compute it here and now. I mean, I'll find it right now. It's in the spreadsheet, so. Let's see. F11 through F106. Oops. Oh, in read-only mode. Jeez. Okay, it looks like the average was 6.88. So your score was just about average.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Oh.